For nature.
For the ocean.
For people.
For animals.
Hello and welcome to the Sun of Splendid podcast, to all the Sun of Splendid people who are listening to this. Today I have a really special guest, a friend of mine, Gary Stokes. Gary Stokes is the founder of Oceans Asia, but the Gary Stokes was doing many, many, many other things before already and is doing crazy many things. You will tell us about it, Gary, right? I want to read one mission statement, what I found on your webpage, because it's really amazing. I think it's really good and it defines everything what you do in the end in two sentences. So your mission statement of Oceans Asia is to investigate and research wildlife crimes, exposing and bringing to justice those destroying and polluting marine ecosystems, to uphold the highest level of integrity, relying exclusively on factual intelligence-based conservation. Woo! I just say, yeah.
There you go.
Right? Hey, welcome, Gary.
Great to see you again, yeah. Finally.
Finally. It's quite some time ago that we met, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in Hong Kong some years ago when I was doing the coral propagation trainer in Malaysia with Anwar. And then I was visiting you with a friend of mine, with Nikki Boda.
Yep. And we went out and saw, took you out to see some of our local Chinese pink dolphins.
Yeah, and in the end, Nikki and me.
And in the end, you were pinker than they were, yes. Yeah, there's a thing called sunscreen and you should think about using it.
Right, I can remember, I was completely red, the whole body was burnt. Yeah. Well, Gary.
Painful.
Yeah. Well, you live in Hong Kong, you are in Hong Kong right now, right?
Yep, yep.
Tell us a little bit about what you're doing there and who are you and what are you doing in Hong Kong?
Yes. Well, where do we start? So I've been in Hong Kong over about 30 years now. I originally came here from the UK, although I spent most of my childhood in the Mediterranean, growing up in Malta and Cyprus. So haven't really spent much time in England because it's too grey, wet, rainy. Bleh. So, I did a short spell in the Royal Navy and then came out to Hong Kong. And I've been working out here in various different, sort of forms. Food and beverage is one. I had my own photography company. I was doing corporate commercial photography, photographing all the boring stuff. But then also I was also teaching diving and getting out into the ocean, which is where I feel sort of most at home. And then they all sort of merged, really. I mean, I started taking my camera underwater, became a bit of an underwater photographer. And then I started seeing the degradation of the oceans, started documenting that. So I sort of come at it from a photography background, really. That's my sort of core. With the camera being the most powerful weapon in the world, if used correctly, I was in Malta and I was filming some bluefin tuna in pens there, just making some stock footage and things like that. And that's when I got a call from Sea Shepherd to see if you would donate your images. They were doing a tuna campaign in the Med. So I said, yeah, of course. And then they asked me if I go on the ship as the photographer, and I couldn't because I had a friend's, my best friend's wedding was right in the middle of the campaign. So I couldn't do it. So I was a bit gutted, but then they said, would you like to go to Antarctica? So I went to Antarctica in 2010, 2011, no compromise on the Bob Barker. And that was life-changing, to say the least. I got back off that. We had saved 863 whales that year, chased Japan all the way to Chile before they quit 6 weeks early, and they headed home. And, I came back. I think everybody who goes on board the ships with Sea Shepherd goes to sea, they come back changed. And I certainly was, already doing conservation work before, but this sort of empowered me to want to just do more. Going back to just taking photos of strawberries or something for a food promo or models, it just wasn't going to cut it. So I came back and luckily, Paul Watson had given me the go ahead to do what you need to do in Asia. And he gave me his full trust. And that was something that was invaluable.
So you
carried on
Shepherd Asia, right?
I then, yeah, set up Sea Shepherd Asia and carried on what I was doing before I joined Sea Shepherd, which was investigating the shark fin industry. So we were sort of snooping around alleyways and sort of looking through windows and trying to find the storage rooms and the drying rooms and you know, hoping to find a delivery when it was coming in and investigating that, try to get the markings off it, the bill of ladens and things like that, so we could track it, where it had come from, and just basically being a pain in the ass to the shark fin industry.
To be a pain in the ass in Hong Kong, living in Hong Kong can be quite dangerous too, huh? Or I mean...
It can have dangerous elements, yeah, definitely. There are different levels with the shark fin industry here. The shark fin traders in the streets, they're old men running a shop that's selling either just shark fin or a multitude of dried seafood. They're not so much the problems, but the drying houses and the warehouses and things like that, that's where it can get a little bit more dicey. Being in a back alleyway of some, you know, warehouse block is not really a fun place to be when you have like 15 guys coming out. It can get a bit dicey. But, you know, you just take precautions. And if you're smart, you won't put yourself in that predicament, you know. Just really being a bit of a pain in the ass. I mean, they used to dry them a lot in the streets. Then after we documented that a lot, got that out, then they started moving to the rooftops. Then we started documenting the rooftops. And obviously with drone technology coming in, it was a lot easier to film a rooftop. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're just constantly, it's like cat and mouse around the city. They moved from Sheung Wan area, which is where most of the shark fin traders are. A lot of the drying and sorting houses were elsewhere. So we had to start getting creative of how we were going to find them, following trucks and things like that up into the new territories. And it's just an ongoing battle of, trying to find something illegal out of something that is actually legal here.
Yeah.
And most people don't really, you know, get that. They think, oh, how can they do that? But shark fin, in most extent, is actually legal in most countries of the world. What we do is look into the illegalities and try to find what would constitute it being illegal and then going after them. So
shark fin obviously in Hong Kong is legal, right? What is the illegal thing then? What is illegal when you're allowed to catch sharks and cut their fins off and sell that? What is the illegal side?
Well, obviously any of the CITES listed protected species are illegal if they were exported illegally. Then there's other ways we can look at if they're shipping them to the US, for example, which states they're shipping them to. There's, you know, a lot of misdeclaration where they're putting wrong names on things just to hide what's in there. A lot of the shipping companies have made, you know, their own embargoes and saying they will not carry. So they'll change it to dried seafood, marine products, dried fish. That's why it's so important when we're actually out on the streets looking for these shipments as they're arriving, and to be able to identify them quick enough and then get the shots with, you know, the labels so we can actually trace it back. And we've had some, you know, really big success. We had a couple of Maersk containers, and Maersk were the first ones to come out and say they wouldn't carry. And when we contacted them, they were really gutted. They couldn't believe that they had basically been cheated. These people were smuggling on their shipping lines. Mm-hmm. And Maersk were really great at helping us. They, you know, we sat down, we went through what they could do to sort of up their security. They changed and added all these keywords. So anybody registering anything now with Maersk that's even got dried seafood or anything like that, the agent booking it will say, yeah, we want to just open the container. We just want to have a look.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they do that or not, that's obviously different countries. But yeah, so they can actually now say, you know, open it. We're not going to put it on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's lots of different ways of trying to get around the legalities. Yeah. Also, where it was caught, you know, if we can track where they were actually caught, were they caught illegally? Mm-hmm. You know, especially when we're dealing with the US, you know, anything caught illegally is completely forbidden to be shipped to the US. Mm-hmm. So under the Act, I'm just trying to remember it. I'll remember it in a minute. Lacey Act.
Mm-hmm.
The Lacey Act. So under the Lacey Act, you cannot import anything to the US that was caught illegally or against anybody's jurisdiction laws.
Mm-hmm.
So those sort of things.
That's kind of a big thing, because when I was in I was in the shark campaign in from Sea Shepherd for 7 months in 2017, and we have been in Costa Rica, right? Costa Rica is an ecotourism country, but the ocean is not protected at all. I mean, very, very little part of the ocean is protected there. And at that time when we have been there, we were filming at Inversiones Cruz, and this is, they are drying shark fins and exporting them. And there were, like, we were talking with fins attached there, and there were with Randall, and there were, he told us there were about up to 10 tons of shark fin, dried shark fins from, for example, hammerhead sharks.
Yep.
They were somewhere hidden because it was protected species. How can you tell people this shark is legally caught and this shark is illegal to catch? How can they choose? I mean, how can the fishermen say, okay, we catch sharks, we are allowed to, but we are not allowed to catch the hammerhead, so we shouldn't do that? But how can they be sure that they don't?
Well, I mean, they don't. and what they do is they'll just stick those hammerhead fins in a big sack. The chances of them, of customs ever actually opening a container that has the dried seafood, it's so far down the priority list that it won't even get opened.
And then the question is, if the people who check, if they really know which...
Would they know what the species are? They have no idea.
Exactly.
You know, we had that with the Totowaba swim bladders recently. Mm-hmm. You know, they came in, they just thought they were fish more. And it was only when we saw the tentacles on it that we said, those are Totowaba.
Yeah.
And they were like, what's that? You know, I mean, most of the customs people, it's not their fault. They haven't been educated or trained on it. So,
yeah, of course. You know. It needs the training, right? It needs this training for the people who are on this job to know how it looks like, what they are searching for.
So that's another thing that we have been doing is some capacity building. We're currently, we've just been doing something on sea cucumbers. So, you know, where we're at now, after Sea Shepherd, I finished with Sea Shepherd a couple of years ago, only because Sea Shepherd were pulling out of Asia. They were spending their funds on the ships in Africa. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I would have still been there, but my work had to carry on. So I partnered up with a very good friend of mine, Till Phelps-Bondaroff, the doctor. And he's my academic partner. He writes all of our reports and things like that. So I tend to do all the investigation stuff. I go out there and I'll find and I'll choose what we're going to, you know, work on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I see something, that is. If not, then we've got projects in the pipeline that Till wants to get into krill.
Yeah.
Okay. And I keep trying to find something else rather than krill. but krill is important as well. Yeah. But we are trying to, you know, everybody talks about shark fin. And yet you've been with me down in Shengwan and, you know, you've seen it down there. It's not just shark fin. There's every single thing. It is the sixth mass extinction that's going on right in front of your face.
In the
There's
street,
everything.
There's mass extinction. Like the seahorses, you find millions of seahorses.
Yep.
I wondered why I never find seahorses on the water. But in Hong Kong, I saw why. They're all there. They're all dead and dried. It's crazy.
Yeah, as an underwater photographer, you know, trying to find a seahorse, you find one and the divers all freak out and spend the rest of the dive just taking a picture of this one seahorse.
Yes.
Here, I can get you 10 kilos in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So what we wanted to do, you know, you have in Chinese banquets, you have the four treasures of the sea, which are, you know, shark fin, abalone, fish maw, the stomach, the swim bladder, mm-hmm. and sea cucumber. And these are all coming in en masse in massive shipments. I mean, we're talking tons after tons in each shipment.
And people do eat sea cucumber. I never think about how they eat the sea cucumber eating.
Absolutely. So the thing is, all the activists are focusing on one, the shark fin. Sea cucumbers are as important to the ocean. I mean, obviously, they are, you know, the cleaners of the ocean. And we're just taking them out in just extraordinary high numbers. But nobody cares. They're not sexy. So one thing that Teal and I decided was we wanted to focus on the not so sexy animals. So, you know, we're doing this. Teal's been working now for about a year on this report for sea cucumbers. And we've been studying the sea cucumber crime in India and Sri Lanka. Because that's one destination we keep finding them coming from here. So what I find here, and then we trace it back. And then just last week, we were doing an online Zoom capacity building thing with the Sri Lankan police, for example. So, you know,
nice.
Just to explain to them what the sea cucumbers were, what they looked like, which species were what, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's all good. It's one of the things that we're now doing with Oceans Asia.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said in the mission statement, you know, intelligence-based conservation. I mean, I find that conservation, a lot of it is done on empathy. You know, please save the poor dolphins. They're so cute. Or this, that, and the other. And people go to governments with that and say, please, no, save the dolphins because it's wrong. You know, and it's like, no.
Yeah.
That's not how governments make their decisions. We need to go on what the law is, what's illegal, what's legal. So looking at things as a criminal investigator and actually literally going there with the law and putting it in front of them and saying, this is undisputable fact, science-based evidence. You know, so that's what we try to do with everything we do, is make sure it is 100% factual, not filling in the gaps with what we feel like should be there. And yeah, so far it's been paying off. But yeah, I mean, obviously with COVID we've had interesting times, as is everybody, but it hasn't stopped us. We've been quite fortunate here. We haven't had hard lockdowns or anything, so we have a small rib here, Sea Wolf. We used to have Amberjack, which was the one you came on.
Nice.
Which is
remember that
one. Yeah, so Amberjack is on last legs, so we got a new one, a new secondhand one. Seawolf. So we use that basically locally around Hong Kong for any campaigns or, you know, anything we want to do in Hong Kong. And that ranges from, I work with Dr. Lindsay Porter and Naomi Brannan, who do all the acoustic research for the Chinese white dolphins, and also the finless porpoise. So we have two cetaceans that are resident here, one that everybody knows, the other one that nobody has ever heard of or nobody's ever seen.
Yeah, I have to say finless, I don't know it.
So the finless porpoise is something I've been spending the last 2 months on, purely because nobody knows it.
Yeah, did you see some? I mean...
So it was my holy grail, was to get out there. Scientists are having a really, really hard time at studying these. They are really small. You know, they're about 1 meter to 2 meters long. They're dark gray to black. They don't have a dorsal fin.
Okay.
So the back is smooth. It actually has a ridge down the back.
Oh.
They come up for one breath.
For
that's
how
it. They come up and go down.
Yeah, you can't.
That's it. Easily,
yeah.
Right? And they're black, gray. You just keep thinking, huh, just think I just saw something over there. So to see them, and they underwater, they go really quick. So it's not like when we go out with the Chinese white dolphins and, you know, they come up and they'll blow. I mean, they're pink, for God's sake. So they're very easy to see.
Yeah.
They blow and then you know, okay, he's going that way, so you can get your camera ready for when he comes up. With these guys, some of the scientists I've spoken to, their best picture looks like a floating car tire. It's just a black bump. And they are so excited because
out of the water, they have no pictures at all.
No, because the water quality here is shocking.
Yeah.
It's quite funny when I saw that. And we were getting lots of them washing up dead.
Okay.
So some of them from boat strikes, some of them from net entanglements, some just diseased or old. Mm-hmm. We don't know the full extent. Mm-hmm. So I've been working with Lindsay Porter on that. And the big problem is we don't know how many there are.
Mm-hmm.
The population here, everybody talks about the Chinese white dolphins, which are in decline. But nobody knows about the finless porpoise.
Yeah.
There was one survey done back in 2005, I think it was, and it said there was 220. Well, we've been getting 30 to 40 dead a year, every year.
Mm.
So if there's only 200, then we're in critical condition. But personally, we believe there's more. Maybe a couple of thousand, who knows? But we don't know, so that's why we wanted.
If you can't find them, then you don't.
Lindsay and her team can't actually really monitor them that well. Mm-hmm. The only way they can do it is with acoustics, underwater recording. So, mm-hmm. They've been doing that for years here. Sometimes that we'll go out and we'll help them with that by taking them on the boat while we're doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I set it as a challenge that I was going to use, because I've been using my drone a lot to film the Chinese white dolphins, and we could see the behavior of the Chinese white dolphin underwater.
Mm-hmm.
But looking through the water column, you could see maybe 2 or 3 meters down. Mm-hmm. And we had some trawlers there, purse seiners, with the big net. And we were watching the dolphins going up underwater and just picking off fish out of the outside of the net.
Okay.
Right. Now, from the surface, you never would have seen that, but from the drone, you could.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when I thought, okay, I'm going to try and get the finless porpoise on the drone.
Uh-huh.
So that was my mission last year, and I succeeded in the end.
Wow.
And I got about 8 minutes of footage of the finless porpoise.
Cool.
The scientists have been freaking about because they've never seen it the way it, so for social behavior, the interactions, things like that, how they're hunting, So I got that last year. And then this year we've had some incredible weather. We have to have it where it's like flat, calm water, like glass. Mm-hmm. Then you can see them quite easily when they pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been going out 5-6 o'clock in the morning, and these little fellas are popping up, and I've got the drone up, and I've now got almost over an hour's footage.
Wow, nice.
Oh, finless porpoises.
So you go close to the fishing nets where the fish comes out.
No. So these guys aren't going anywhere near fishing boats. So
okay.
I'm just going out, and literally I sit out there at 6 a.m. when it's like glass, and I just wait, turn the engine off and just wait, and I have the drone ready to go. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I see something pop up, I send the drone up and get over them and start filming them. So last week I documented a new hunting method, apparently, or for porpoises. So where they're actually using their tail to slap fish. Uh-huh. So I had one hunting, and it went into a big ball of fish, and he just smacked his tail and sent them skyward, stunning the fish, and then went in and ate them. And we've seen that with dolphins. We've seen it with orca, but we've never seen it with a porpoise. So at the moment, we're doing a joint paper with Lindsay to put that new behavior out. So this is all the fun stuff.
Awesome.
I've even got some porpoise porn.
What?
There we go. Yeah. So there's two species of finless porpoise. The northern one up around Korea, they've got lots of documented footage of. The southern one, apparently we were the first to get aerial footage last year. So that's why it's been motivated me to go out and get more.
Of course.
But the behavioral side of it is great, and we've put in for some grants now as well to try and get some more funding so we can get out there more often.
Get as well a bit of funding from scientists for scientific research, right?
Yes. Awesome. So we've been putting that in partnership with Lindsay to put that in.
Cool.
So that's the purpose.
How do you fund Oceans Asia otherwise? I mean, this is an organization. You need some funds. You need support. How do we do that?
Yeah. So at the moment, I mean, we're relatively new. So, you know, even though we've got a bit of a history, both myself and Till, in conservation, when we first found it about 2 years ago and we first set it up, you know, we didn't want to go and sort of do fundraising based on our previous experiences. We wanted to get some victories under our belt first for Oceans Asia, and then we could then start, you know, rolling those out and saying, look, this is what we're doing, you know, we need some help, da da da. So for the first year or so, we haven't done any fundraising at all. Mm-hmm. I also have a restaurant here in Hong Kong, a vegan restaurant, and basically I've been using that to fund Oceans Asia. Mm-hmm. So Hemingway's in Hong Kong has been funding the conservation, you know, organization.
So you're vegan too?
Absolutely.
And why? I mean, I know why, but tell please the Sun's Planet community, why are you vegan?
Everybody who goes vegan, they have their own personal reasons. And I've basically put it down to being one of three. I mean, with the restaurant, I did a lot of talking to media about veganism and plant-based movement. And I'd rather use the word plant-based than vegan, because that normally gets people just going, eh. Mm-hmm. You know, they think we're little green men with funny heads and three eyes, you know. The vegans are coming, watch out. And it's interesting how as soon as you say plant-based, it tones it down a little bit more. It's more acceptable.
Yeah.
I find that people are either doing it for health reasons, they switch to vegan, or animal rights, animal cruelty, mm-hmm. or the environment. Mm-hmm. And I think most people who go vegan, it's a combination of all three, but there's always one that's more of a priority. For me, it was the environment. Mm-hmm. Then it was animal rights, then it was health.
It was animal first, then environment, and then the health.
Yeah,
health was exactly. One of the last things for me.
Exactly. Well, only because I'm looking out for everything else rather than myself first, which is kind of stupid as well. But for me it was more the environment and everything. And also not being a hypocrite.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes. How can I mean, when I had the restaurant, so the restaurant, when we first opened, I had a small share, and it was a barbecue beef, sort of ribs and whatever. It was a barbecue grill.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the beach. It was a bar and restaurant, but it was, you know, meat and fish and everything, you know. And as I developed in conservation, as I went through, that became more of an internal battle that I was having with myself. And it got to the point where I just said, enough, I can't do this anymore. I'm a hypocrite if I carry on. And I went to my partner and I said, look, I want to sell my 10% share. I can't do this anymore. And he said, well, and he was the 80% shareholder. And he said, well, actually I want to sell, and I'm going to sell it to the guys next door. I've been talking with them. And I was like, no, you can't sell it to them. They're a big chain, and they'll come in. And we'd been running for 13 years already, and we had some really cool staff who have been with us through everything. They were more like family. So I came back and I said, okay, well, I get first refusal, right? He said, yes. I said, okay, I'll buy your shares. So I then, you know, we just sold our house. So I actually used our money from my house and bought the rest of the restaurant. Came home and my wife was like, you've done what? So now we own 90% of a meat restaurant. How is that one? I'm going to turn it vegan.
Yeah.
And she was just like, we're going to lose all our money. Mm-hmm. And I was, but I was quite confident. I mean, everywhere I've been around the world with Sea Shepherd, every city I've been to, plant-based restaurants were literally kicking off, and there were queues in every single one. And I had a good confidence that what I wanted to do was, you know, have something that was just everyday food,
yeah,
not fancy schmancy stuff, just everyday burgers and, you know,
yeah,
stuff like that, pizzas.
Well, things people love, even when they are not vegan, they would eat it. You know?
Yeah, curries, Indian, we got some great Indian food on there. So I sort of did that, and inside, instead of having that conflict inside, I now had my two worlds sort of came together, if that sounds a bit corny.
Amazing.
But suddenly now I have this restaurant that I can, you know, be proud of in the conservation movement, and also use that to educate people in the restaurant. You know, diners who are coming in, who were meat eaters and everything else, we, you know, there's still a lot of carnivores coming in because we sell beer and we have great live music. But they're coming in and they see the food. They see like a plate of nachos go past, go, oh, I'm hungry. And they have it. And I don't make a big deal about it's plant-based or anything. And if they ask, it's plant-based. It's on all the menus. It says it's there. But yeah, it's been interesting over the time we've done it. The amount of people who at first thought I was completely insane, but now it's become, you know, they're coming to me now because obviously the plant-based movement has grown so much in the last couple of years. Mm. And we were lucky. We were ahead of the wave when that all happened. So we've been riding it. And yeah, I've had people coming in. They're going, you know what? I've eaten vegetarian for 2 days a week now for the last 2 months. I'm like, great, brilliant.
Awesome. Yes.
You know, they're like, yeah, well, we're not quite vegan yet. Or I've got other people coming in, you know, I'm trying my best. I'm like, that's fantastic.
That's,
you know, I'm not a preachy vegan. I don't want to be one of those vegan militant, you know, vegans.
Same. No, that would be destroying it, because there are so many people opening, and that they might be, maybe many people don't want to be 100% vegan, but they are opening for it, and then they eat a little bit less meat and eat more vegan things. This is already a great thing. If many people would do that, awesome.
If everybody went vegan 2 days a week, that would be a third of the world's problems solved.
That's the thing.
So, you know, I mean, when you get people that are a bit militant and saying it's all or nothing, it's just insane.
It's not black or white. This is not the way how
it doesn't make sense. And you know, these are habits that people have to get out of. And it's like quitting smoking, you know.
Yeah,
you've got to want to quit, and like really want to quit, not just say you want to quit. Mm. You know, so yeah, I mean, the restaurant obviously now it fuels the conservation that we're doing.
Awesome.
So one feeds the other, which is great.
That's really cool. And you have been participating in the movie Seaspiracy, which is out on Netflix right now. And I would recommend anyway, everybody to see this movie. Please watch the movie. It's really important message there. And there it's a lot about the background of fishing and what it's doing as well to the planet, and that many people don't talk about what would be the best to really save the ocean. Because many organizations are talking about, yeah, ocean conservation, or they work on ocean conservation. They climb to do that. And then in the end, they say the best thing you can do is eat more meat, which comes from sustainable fishing. What do you think? What do you say about that? I mean,
yeah, it's mind blowing. And that's where Ali and Lucy did a fantastic job, I think, with Seaspiracy, just getting over that message. I spent a couple of weeks with them when they were in Hong Kong. We were doing all the filming in Hong Kong, even though it was only a very small segment in the movie. They crammed so much in. Mm-hmm. But yeah. The insanity of people doing, you know, fundraisers for Save the Ocean, and they're doing a barbecue, hot dogs and everything else, and it's like that's just insane. It's yeah, we see quite a lot of these NGOs who are just talking about sustainable fishing, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, WWF are a classic for that, and many others. Who just believe, yeah, we've got to go sustainable. Let's promote sustainable fishing. Well, sadly, there is no such thing. It's a great concept if that's the way you want to go. You know, if that's what you believe in, but it's far, far, far away from ever becoming a reality, in my eyes, from what I've seen when I've been out at sea around Southeast Asia. Now, I'm not talking about the whole world. I mean, this is where we've already seen the backlash that's come from since the movie's come out. We've already been, you know, sort of seeing the fishing industry coming out, MSC, the certification people coming out. I mean, they're the biggest joke there is on the planet. I'm sorry. I have a real, real sort of, it riles me up. These labels that they stick on there to tell you it's sustainable, and it's not.
Yeah.
MSC last year just put in They said they were going to be putting bluefin tuna and trying to certify one in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, bluefin tuna, Mediterranean bluefin tuna stocks are far, far from ever becoming back to where they should be. Yeah. You know, they have improved a little bit, but that doesn't mean to say, oh, it's okay to go and fish them. Let them get back to where they were in 1960. Yeah. And then we could then maybe look at what they're sort of, but you got them, you got Friends of the Sea. I had a go at Gordon Ramsay in Hong Kong. Gordon did a great thing in the UK. He banned bluefin tuna from all his restaurants. But the franchise over here in Hong Kong, they had Chef's special, Gordon's special was bluefin tuna. Okay. So I called him out and it was great. He came back and took it off the menu. None of our places ever have bluefin tuna, so that was a mistake. The franchise holder, da 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 da. But then I then looked around town and we started seeing more and more restaurants that were suddenly getting bluefin tuna again.
Okay.
I thought this is strange. There's a real big push, and they're all being told it's sustainable by either MSC or there's another one called Friends of the Sea.
Yeah.
And there was one restaurant group. Now, apparently this guy, I know he's very, very much in tune with the whole from the field to the plate. So he'll be able to tell you which farmer, where he bought the cow from, sort of thing, you know, whether that's right or wrong, but at least he's doing the traceability to get back to know where the food is actually coming from. And they had bluefin tuna, and I called him up and I said, listen, you know, why have you got bluefin tuna? I know what you're on about. You know, ours is sustainable. I said, well, it's not. There's no such thing. And he said, right, come into my office. You've got 10 minutes to convince me.
Okay.
So, nice. So I went, okay. So I went in. Now, this guy, I'm not saying his name deliberately, but he's got probably 10 of the most exclusive restaurants in Hong Kong. These are top end. I mean, in food and beverage, he is the top of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's amazing. The quality, everything he does. So I went into his office, we sat down, and he said, right, I've been doing my homework, and I know you went after Gordon because he had this one from Balfago, which is the Spanish bluefin tuna. Well, we don't have Mediterranean bluefin tuna. We have from Australia, southern bluefin tuna.
Okay.
And I just sat there and I just went, cool. Okay. So you don't have endangered bluefin tuna? Nope. I said, no, you have critically endangered southern bluefin tuna. And he was just, what? I said, yep. If you just type in there on your little computer, just in Google, southern bluefin tuna, IUCN. And it popped up with the red list, critically endangered. And he went, oh, shit. Yeah. And
look it off.
Said straight away, well, they're off the menu. And then he pulled out all this Friends of the Sea paraphernalia that he had been sent. I said, but these guys are saying it's sustainable. I said, well, it's not. It's impossible. Then I went in and explained the whole spawning thing and the whole farm and the ranch where they say they're ranched.
Yeah,
they're not ranched. They're caught as juveniles. They've had no chance to populate,
exactly,
or reproduce. They get put in and fattened up and then sent to Japan.
Yeah, and fattened up with fish, just caught again, right? I mean,
wild fish. Yeah. So when I actually went through it with him, then he said, "There's my menu. Can you go through and tell me what other fish aren't sustainable?"
Wow, that's a big thing, huh?
Yeah, no. So he was really cool, but it was nice to see that mindset.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, obviously it wasn't a vegan restaurant, obviously. I mean, he does all the sort of wagyu beef and, you know, Angus beef and all this lot, but he's at least trying to find out where it's coming from and trying to be a bit more responsible.
Yeah,
but that's it's a big still thing.
Many people are not even trying, and they just justify things with wrong knowledge.
Yeah, so that's where I have a real problem with MSC, Friends of the Sea, this dolphin safe. I mean, that was hysterical watching that in the movie. Yeah. I mean, I felt for the guy. He was just digging a hole and he was claiming that, yeah, well, we can't guarantee if it's actually any dolphins are being killed for the tuna.
Yeah. I was really like,
why are you putting your label on it then? Yeah. Well, you know, our observers can be bribed. I mean, we never know. Mm.
It was devastating.
Yeah, I was
crazy. But everyone should watch this movie, definitely. And to not make the podcast too long, I have some questions still, which are...
Go for it.
First of all, I would love to know how the people can support you. I mean, what is the possibility to support you? I will definitely put all the links and stuff in the show notes that they can go check out your webpage and Oceans Asia page to see what you're doing, what you're up to. But what can people do? Donating, probably. But what else? Yeah.
So we have a Patreon that we set up. So for monthly donors, we've also had, because one of the things I feel when I donate to NGOs, I want to know where the money's going. So one of the things we've got on our site is, you know, different things that you can actually just purchase straight away there and then. So like a day's patrol on the small boat is 100 US, you know? So it's like, you know, we just had somebody yesterday, it's 5 days of fuel, basically. That gets us out on the water. Now, on the water, we're also not just looking at dolphins. I've been doing a lot of work now. We may be running out of time, but on the illegal fishing here. Because of COVID, I can't fly anywhere. We've got incursions from mainland boats coming in. So we've been using the boat to go out there and chase out illegal fishing boats from China. Yeah. And working with the Hong Kong Marine Police and the agricultural fisheries. And we've managed to, in the last 2 months, we've had one illegal fishing boat enter, whereas we were having 10 to 15 a day. So, you know, that's really good. So that's where these patrols have been really important, getting out there. Other things where Teal has got a research team. So there's things on the website where we've got like research materials they need, or even down to simple things like subscriptions for like marine traffic, which we use to track all of our shipping. So when we're doing investigations as a shipping industry or fishing fleets and things like that, we use marine traffic, and we've actually partnered with them. So we've got special deals with that. But yeah, little things like that. So there's that way where I feel I'm just doing what I like is to know where it's going. We even had something, coffee, where you could buy it for the price of a coffee. And I think that was a website called Coffee.
What do you do there? I didn't get it.
You actually buy us a coffee. So for the price of a coffee. Nice. Okay. And it just sends us, I think it was $5. That's what we priced the coffee at. And so just for smaller donations, if people just want to just help something small, it all sort of helps, you know, it all adds up. At the moment, that's where we're at. Fundraising wise, I'm probably the worst fundraiser because I'm too busy just trying to do the work, you know. I want to be out on the water. I want to be in the streets doing documenting stuff.
Yes, I do so much because I'm the same. I want to act, and I don't want to use so much time for marketing things, for making fundraising. Yeah. This is not my thing.
And that's something that we've both talked about this year. We need to focus on or get somebody on board to do.
Yeah.
Because Till's busy doing research, I'm busy doing investigations. We need someone to get on, so some help with that would be good.
Yeah, that's great. And I have a question. Like,
what are the questions?
Two more questions. My most important question, I think, is what I ask everyone who is participating as an interview guest. People tell me always, well, you know, what you do does make a difference. Not many people say it now, but at the beginning, many said it. Right now, people see that there is a difference coming, but so many people still think you alone can't make a difference. What do you say to the people who say that to you? What would be your answer if someone says, hey, Gary, just because of you, nothing changes? What would you answer?
Look at the results. Without it sounding egotistical, one person can make a massive difference. Example I gave a talk at a local Chinese school, and we were talking about shark fin, and went home that evening. I got a phone call from a Chinese guy. Are you Mr. Stokes? Yes. Did you talk at my son's school? I thought, oh god, here we go. I'm gonna get abuse of, like, you know, keep your Western ideals out of my, you know, And he said, you talked to my son about shark fin? I said, yes. We were talking about, you know, sustainable, you know, things on the planet and how it's unsustainable and how cruel it is. And he said, my son is very, very passionate about this. And he has told me now I cannot have any more shark fin soup. I said, okay. And he goes, so I will no longer have shark fin soup. I went, wow, that's awesome. And he goes, but I own four companies. And I have said now we make it policy. My son said we can't have any of our companies either. So four companies, Chinese companies, are now no longer having shark fin soup because, wow, not because of me, because that little kid told his dad,
yes,
you can't have it anymore. So one person can make a difference. That little boy made a massive difference. I mean, there's probably hundreds of staff in those four companies, if not thousands, that won't be having shark fin soup anymore, or not at the official company banquet. So one person can't make a difference. Well, he did. So
amazing. You know, thank you.
So yeah, I think that's the way to look at it, is everybody can, and everybody is simple. It's just little stuff.
Yeah.
It really is the little stuff, but they all adds up to something bigger. And obviously the more you can do, the better. But number one for me would be reduction of seafood consumption.
And
single-use plastic.
Yeah. You do a lot of campaigns on single-use plastic too. You have a lot.
Obviously recently with COVID, so the probably the most famous picture we've had recently was when we were doing some research, plastic research, out on the Soko Islands, February, just after COVID had broken out in Hong Kong and China. And we had all these face masks washing up, and I collected them all. We put them on a bit of rope, and I held it up, and Naomi took a photo, and I posted it and just said, you know, guys, be a bit more responsible about where you're putting it. Yeah. We woke up the next day, we had over 500,000 views.
That's amazing.
And it went insane. We've had over 5,000 independent news articles over the last year. All we've been talking about is masks. We put out a report in December, a scientific backed report, basically with, you know, the calculation was 1.56 billion masks entered the oceans in 2020.
That's crazy.
1.56
the masks
billion.
Are made out from plastic. It's plastic.
They're all polypropylene, spun polypropylene. So they're going to be breaking down. They're already breaking down now. But they're going to be around in the ocean as microplastics for the next couple of hundred years. So these, you know, when I say fishing is the most important, it is. But plastic is definitely in close second place.
Yeah. And what last question for this podcast today? What will be your best or your biggest message you would like to share with the community here or with the people out there in general? What would be your biggest words or the biggest things you want to share right now? What you have in your mind? What do you still want to share?
I think we shared most of it. Well, just I think we are on a verge of a big shift. There's a big change. It's happening, and it's not just, it's going mainstream now. And I think, don't resist it. Get on board with it and embrace it, because, you know, it's definitely leading us in the right direction. Whether that, you know, that's the whole plant-based movement, whether that's changing how we're doing our daily activities, all these things. Now, obviously with COVID, there's been a lot of big changes, but there's a lot of good stuff coming out of COVID. You know, we're seeing wildlife coming back to areas where they weren't, you know, they weren't even being seen. You know, there's so much relief. Coral reefs that used to get bombarded by divers after divers after divers have had a relief. You know, when we do finally get out of COVID restrictions and we can actually get out there, I think, you know, it's really key that we can enjoy the world that it is, but also to protect it even more, you know, because it's had its chance to rebound back. And I think you'd be quite surprised at how much it's rebounded back.
Mm-hmm. And how fast it could, if we let it. Yeah.
The oceans here bounce back. We banned trawling in 2012. And by 2014, we had, you know, the oceans were just erupting with life again. Sadly, that's what brought in all the illegal fishing boats.
Yeah.
So then, you know, that's why we're addressing that. But yeah, give nature a chance. It bounces back pretty quick.
That's really cool. Well, Gary, I thank you so much for your time. I think the whole community will thank you so much for your words and for your sharings and stories. It's amazing. It's amazing to know you. I really can't say anything else, but thank you from deep in my heart for everything you do. It's
thank
awesome.
You for having me.
And I will definitely see how we support you as a Sanus Planet as well, because Oceans Asia is doing incredible work. And I think these things, these organizations need to be supported. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great time, Gary, and I hope to see you soon again live.
I hope so. With sunscreen.
Yeah, with sunscreen next time. Exactly. Thank you, Gary.
Bye.
Bye.